Prepare yourselves for a mind-blowing special made by a remarkable team of creators who didn't have a clue what the others were crafting.
Am I evil?
Adult Swim is proud to present The Elephant.
Who are you?
Hey everyone, it's Jonathan. Welcome to Season 8 of iHeart Animation. Today's episode was almost a spur-of-the-moment decision. I was not even planning on doing a podcast on this, let alone making it my season premiere, but at the beginning of January, I watched Adult Swim's half-hour animated special on HBO Max, The Elephant, and I was so taken aback by it that as soon as it was over, I texted Conrado Falco and Eli Sanza to see if they wanted to do a podcast with me. The Elephant is one of the most unique animated shorts I have ever seen. It is one story told in three parts, and each part is written and animated by a completely different team who have no idea what the others are doing. And somehow, beyond all reason and logic, the story comes together in such a way that it just works. It works so well that I was blown away, and I had to talk to someone about it.
Wait a minute. You can make everything better.
Yeah, that's right.
The deeper you go, the sooner the end.
Now you draw the next panel.
Such exquisite chaos.
Well, thanks for joining me for this one. This is not one that I had planned on doing, and I hadn't even really planned on recording much at all in January, but I watched this special and I was like, this needs to be a podcast.
Yeah.
And you guys were the two first people that I thought of that might enjoy this. I figured Eli probably had already seen it, but I wasn't sure if Conrado had.
I mean, I hadn't even heard about it, honestly, until you brought it up. And I'm glad you did. I had a great time.
I didn't know what to expect when I went into this because, like, the whole premise of this just sounds like it's something that shouldn't work. Like, it's three different groups of people. It was one person, then two people, then one person, each taking a third of this special, not knowing what the other person is doing, and writing something that is supposed to connect with the other two. Mm-hmm. And, like, to me, like, I like all of the people who made this. I don't know how familiar you guys are with the four creators of this special. Pendleton Ward did the first third. Ian Jones-Quartey and Rebecca Sugar did part two. And the last part was Patrick McHale. And I love all of their stuff that I've seen in the past. So I knew that at least I would like their sections by themselves, but I didn't know if this was going to work as a whole.
Yeah. I heard about this, and all I knew before I watched this was that all these people, Pendleton Ward, Rebecca Sugar, a bunch of people who I am also a fan of, these people that I heard of and have seen their work on Cartoon Network, were all collaborating on some one-shot special for Adult Swim. And that was literally all I knew. When I watched it and when I found out how they made it, that was surprising to me. And I really liked this premise because I like when creators do like wild stuff like this.
I really enjoyed the special. I had never heard about it until Jonathan brought it up. I am familiar with most of the creators in one way or another. I have seen and really love Over the Garden Wall, which I think that's Patrick McHale, right?
Yes.
And then Pendleton Ward, I know it did Adventure Time, which I've seen some of. Then I've seen some of Steven Universe. Can you remember the names of the guys who did the middle section again?
Ian Jones-Quartey and Rebecca Sugar. They're actually married, but she created right. Steven Universe. He also right. worked on that, and then he went to make his own show, OKKO,
right.
which I haven't seen much of.
That's the only one that I have no idea what that's about. I haven't seen a single episode or image, really, of. I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with that. But I've seen some Steven Universe, some Adventure Time, and I've seen Over the Garden Wall and loved it, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually thought this was going to be a four-part miniseries. Like, I must have read the article wrong, because I heard that each of these creators was going to be working on something for Adult Swim, and I thought it was going to be a miniseries. Mm-hmm. So when I heard that it had dropped, I went to HBO Max and pulled it up, and I was looking for a miniseries, and I saw it was like one episode. I was like, am I early? Did they only release one episode? So I started watching it, and then like a third of the way through, I realized what was actually happening. And it blew my mind that like by the time I got to the end, I was like, I cannot believe how well this worked.
It really, so it did leave me with a lot of questions about how did they go about this? What did they know and what did they not know? I mean, clearly they must have known some vague idea of the premise, right? We're going to do a special where it's about three interconnected parts that we're not going to know anything about, but it's going to be, I assume that they knew it was going to be about this kind of like character that was
I think they had a
itself a
very,
patchwork.
yes, they had a very vague idea of the premise. The actual premise of this, the idea of doing this, because this is based on the game Exquisite Corpse. Are you guys familiar with that game?
Yes, I actually it, as soon as you send it over to me, it reminded me of that because when I was in middle school, I was part of like a after school writing group, like kind of program, and the teacher back then used to make us do Exquisite Corpse between all of us, so we would write one sentence or one paragraph and then we would fold the paper over and then hand it to the next guy or student, and then they would write the next paragraph, and then at the end we would read the whole story, and it would be really cool and stuff. I know that Exquisite Corpse is not about writing necessarily, the original version, but we used to do the writing version, so this reminded me a lot of that because it was also, we were creating stories, and then you at the end you would be like, oh, that's funny how that kind of worked or that didn't or whatever, you know.
When I was a kid, we played a version called Who, What, When, Where, Why, where that we'd each have a piece of paper and we'd write further down the who, what, when, where, why, and then we'd take turns writing the who, then we fold it over and pass it to the next person, and then write what they did, and then fold it over and pass it next, so until we got to the end. So the Exquisite Corpse, for the most part, I believe it is more of a drawing game where someone draws a head, folds it over, then the next person draws the body, folds it over, the next person draws the legs. And they
Which
actually did
makes
both for this.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say because that makes sense given that the character is usually has that design to it, that it, the fa the head, the middle, and the legs are different each time.
Yes, I did wonder about that the first time I watched this, and I forgot to look it up, and then I watched this again yesterday, and then I saw they had an extras tab on HBO Max that was a little, there was like a half hour documentary about how they made this. So I was like, oh, I'm glad I'm watching this before we do the podcast.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know they had that. I'm gonna watch that. Well, maybe you'll tell me all the information that I already did, but I watch it definitely after this record.
Yeah, well, I'll give an overview of it, but I would say watch it anyways because it is really fascinating to watch them work. So the idea of this came from someone I was not familiar with, Vishnu Athreya. He's like a producer on a bunch of cartoons. Like his most common credit on IMDb is production management, but he had the idea to do an Exquisite Corpse animation short. And he was like, wouldn't it be cool if we could get so and so and so and so? He's like, not thinking that he could actually get the actual people. He had worked with them before. I don't know if he's friends with them or not, but he wanted somebody like all of the people in the short, and they all ended up loving the idea. So they all came together and they first played Exquisite Corpse to design the characters, which, because the first time I watched this, I was like, there's such bizarre designs. Because, like, the premise is this character who doesn't have a name at the beginning and then has two other names in the other shorts because, like, nobody knew what they were working on. So this character is sort of born and dies and is reborn multiple times. And they knew, like, one of the few rules that they had for making their short was that the character has to die at the end because then they're reborn in the next one. So they played Exquisite Corpse three times and then chose which version of the character was going to be their version for their short. And that's basically all they knew, I believe. They had one person, Mike L. Mayfield, who was like the go-between. Like, he was the only person who was allowed to see what each of them were working on, just to kind of make sure that everything was going to be at least cohesive. Like he couldn't like affect the story, I don't think, but he could like answer questions like, if I do this, will this still make sense? Stuff like that. So they did have somebody who was a go-between, but they were still each making their own short that was then put together to become a larger story.
None of the directors knew what the other directors on the other segments were making.
Yeah. It's really cool. I mean, I think the idea is really, really great. And I was really glad that you brought this to my attention because, yeah, I've been a little bit plucked out of the animation world recently, but so it was nice to see that there's still cool things going on because, you know, the last few kind of like mainstream animated movies that I watched, I kind of didn't really like very much. So it's cool to find something like this. I also watched, I don't know if you guys have seen, you probably have this movie Little Amelie and or the character of Rain, I think it's what it's called, which
It's
is
on
up
my
for award.
list. I have not seen it yet, but I'm planning
Okay.
to watch it soon.
Yeah, so that was really great. That's another recent animated thing that I was like, oh yeah, animation, it's still great. You know, they can still do amazing stuff. So yeah. And I would be interested to see like this, you know, I would love to see more specials like this, just, you know, experiments and stuff. So I'm really glad that they're making them.
I am very plugged into the animation world, so I'm always seeing the latest movies and shows that are coming out. And this, I'm glad you watched this. If you were getting tired of mainstream animation, this is a good thing to watch because this is very different from most things that get made, and it's a lot more creative than most things that get made. And especially since it's not even a show or a movie, it's like a half hour special, and the people who are making this were almost not even certain it was going to get made because it was such a long shot and it's so wildly different from anything else that it was basically just an experiment. So it's really different and unique, which is why I liked it so much. One of the reasons why I liked it so much.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised at how much I liked it because I went in thinking I would enjoy it for what it was, but I wasn't expecting it to be something that would like grab me, let alone be something that I would be like, I need to talk about this.
Yeah.
I hoped I would like it. It sounded really interesting, and it's like I was like hoping this would be good. It exceeded my expectations, though.
Definitely the same here. I expected that it was going to be fun and like, you know, wacky and original. I did not expect to come out of it thinking that it really was, you know, it had like a very coherent, thematically interesting story to it at the end that I was like, oh, you can actually like analyze and think about this story and what this means and stuff, which
And
was really good.
it was emotional. I got It was an emotional story, and that was the most surprising thing.
I want to go through the whole thing, but there's a part towards the end where it's like it grabbed me and like caught my breath in a way that I was not expecting from this short.
Yes, me neither.
Well, let's start at the beginning of the short. The first third is Pendleton Ward's third. He's the showrunner of Adventure Time. I would say he's probably the most famous of these. Maybe Rebecca Sugar could be right up there with him now, but like 10 years ago, Pendleton Ward is like everybody knows who he is if you're like into animation, because Adventure
Yeah,
Time was huge.
it was huge. Yes.
And when this started, as soon as it was, I was like, this is like one of the weird episodes of Adventure Time. Like, if you've watched all of Adventure Time, you know there are certain episodes that are just bizarre, like so bizarre. And this is like that. Like, it looks totally different than Adventure Time, but it is like one of the more bizarre episodes of Adventure Time. That's interesting because I haven't seen that much Adventure Time, so I didn't exactly. I was surprised at the end to realize that he had directed that short based on what I had seen of Adventure Time. So because you know, but I guess now that you mentioned that, it makes more sense. Yeah, I will say. That segment was my least favorite, even though I did like it. I think that before, because because I hadn't fully realized what was gonna happen as with the character being reborn, you know. So that whole action sequence and it was very kinetic. There's a lot of great animation, but I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to watch like, you know, 20 minutes of like this kind of action stuff, you know. And then there's the cat character who's funny. And also kind of like creepy and gross, the head that is inside the cat and stuff. So I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to watch. But then, so I appreciated that it shifted gears in the second part, but you know,
It really went for it in this first one.
I had a similar reaction to the first act because I was when I first saw that I was like, I what was I what am I watching right
Yes.
now? That's what like what am I watching? This is so weird. Like weirder than the other segments, which is why it was a risky thing to start on. But yeah, no, but like I knew that it was like a this whole thing was like around 20, 30 minutes, so I knew it was gonna be short, so I wasn't gonna abandon. I was like, I'm gonna dive into this. I'm just gonna go through it, and hopefully this will become coherent or it'll grab me in some way. And yeah, and like and it and the great thing is that it was visually really amazing, so it wasn't exactly like boring or anything.
Yeah, this first third is the most abstract of all of these, which is why
Yeah.
I likened it to one of the more bizarre episodes of Adventure Time, because Adventure Time could get very abstract at times. And I'm still not 100% sure exactly what was happening. It seemed like there was some kind of giant humanoid robot creature that was like, I don't know, chained up and being harvested for parts, but it was like still alive, but the parts all grew back when they took apart. And then, like, one of the eyeballs that they took kind of goes rogue and then eventually morphs into like a deformed humanoid woman who is the main character of all of this. Like, she changes forms multiple times, but this is the main character.
Yeah, I appreciated that they use the same voice actor, I think, for all three parts for the main character.
I believe they did, yes.
Even though the character changes a lot, I think that was a good idea for it to carry through, you
Yeah,
know, like I think.
that was a good idea because that simplifies things.
Yeah, and it allows for there to be someone, you know, up there in the creative process who knows what's going on with the others, right? And she can bring what was happening in the previous segment to the next one without, you know, spoiling it for the creators who were directing and stuff.
The main voice is someone named Jordan Jensen, who I'm not familiar with. She does not have a very long IMDb page.
No, I'm not familiar with her either.
I think the person that I'm most familiar with is the person who voiced the cat that saves her life. The cat named Meowmalade, which is like, that is such an Adventure Time name. And also such an Adventure Time voice, because this is Maria Bamford playing Meowmalade. And she did so many voices on Adventure Time. I love her voice. I love her, but she has such a great voice for cartoons.
I always loved her on Adventure Time. She's a great voice actor and a great like stand-up comedian too. Like she
Yes.
does like so yeah, like I'm a big fan of her.
Yes, me too. I love her. She has a documentary coming out, I believe. I saw that it was playing at Sundance, and I'm like, I hope that this documentary goes to all the different film festivals, because I'm going to the Julian Dubuque International Film Festival, the Iowa Film Festival, basically, in April. And I'm like, if they have this movie, I'm going to see it. I've got to see this movie.
And I plan to if it ever streams.
Yeah, I want to, like, even if I don't get to see it at a film festival, which would be the ideal way to see it, as soon as it's streaming somewhere, I've got to watch it because I love Maria Bamford. But yeah, this cat saves her life, and she's being chased by the creatures that are harvesting the giant humanoid robot creature, and one of them like shoots off her arm, but the arm starts morphing and becomes another character. It's sort of like a weird little frog thing, and then it morphs again and becomes a less grotesque version of a weird little frog thing. Like, the whole thing is so bizarre, it's hard to even explain. You just kind of have to watch it.
This is a very like see to understand type of thing.
Yeah, I would say yes, that first segment is really experiential in a way. Like, you just it I guess maybe that's good too, you know, because it begins with a bang and it just throws you in there. There's not like, you know, a lot of explanation, exposition, nothing like that. It's just kind of like hits the ground running and throws you into something weird and kind of prepares you to see weird stuff. So then when the later weird stuff happens, you're like, well, this is, you know, in comparison, this is not that weird. So
That's true.
I'm here for the
Actually, kind of a brilliant move, actually, yeah.
And towards the end, the cat has brought her to I guess an underwater hideout where they keep all of their regular stuff. But
Right. The cat is very funny. You're right. And the voice performance, like you mentioned, is very funny.
This also just was so Adventure Time because they have there's a bunch of stuff, and I'm just going to assume that all of this stuff, else like the Little Mermaid, everything has different names than what it actually is, because the cat has a mousetrap called they call a weaver, and this apparently allows you to send things to yourself in another existence. And I was like, okay, so is this the premise of this story? Like, is the next existence going to be getting whatever they're sending, which they didn't do, and that makes sense knowing that they can't know what each person's thing is. But at the end of this, they have this assassin thing that had been chasing her breaks in and tries to shoot the frog arm creature, but she throws herself in front of it and dies, basically. And then the mousetrap is set off and it goes black, moving us to the next third. And part two, this is where Rebecca Sugar and Ian Jones-Cordy are the showrunners. And this was also bizarre, but in a completely different way. This main character, the same main character, is like a giant pink fluff ball with like the head of the dodo bird from Looney Tunes, like the old dodo
Yeah,
bird from Looney
exactly.
Tunes.
I was thinking of the
Like,
what was the name of the character from? Did you guys watch Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends?
I think I've seen a
Yeah,
couple episodes, but
there
it's
was
been
that
so
the
long I
bird
don't remember.
character. Yeah, it reminded me of
Yeah.
that too. Or
Coco,
Big
I think.
Bird. Oh, Coco. That's right. Coco was the bird, and then I thought of Big Bird as well.
Yeah. I can see that.
It also had legs that reminded me of like the sexy Patrick meme, like from
Yeah,
SpongeBob.
definitely. When he's wearing the yeah. The designs are very bizarre and very funny in their own way.
And again, this is like the one that is the most obvious that it is an Exquisite Corpse character, because the three parts are so completely different than each other. Like, there's nothing in common with each of these. Whereas the other ones kind of looked more coherent a little.
This is also the one that I think this animation team takes the most advantage of the fact that there are different parts in terms of how they animate the character. The way the character moves is very, like, wobbly, almost gives you a little bit of that rubber hose early animation kind of thing. They're really going for it. And it has this long neck and these long limbs, so there's a lot of, waving around that it's like, it's really making you realize what a weird character this is.
Yeah, the arms reminded me of like dryer tube, like dryer vent tubes, except they had like rubber gloves on the end, and they really leaned into that with how wiggly and wobbly they made this character.
It was probably my favorite design of the three main characters. It just because it's so, I mean, it's because of the way they animated it and just like how strange it looks. And the legs, you're right to point out the legs. The legs are so funny.
When they did the Exquisite Corpse game, they obviously had no idea what the short was going to be. But in the behind the scenes documentary, I think Rebecca said that this was the one that they picked, partly because in the middle of the character there's a big button, and she said she wanted to see the button being pushed. And then the legs reminded them of like dancers or like rave music, so they that the between the legs and the button, it gave them like the genesis of this idea of what this middle section became.
Her imagination ran wild.
Yeah, that's a great backstory. I mean, it really speaks to the kind of thing that comes up when you are doing something experimental in this way, right? And to see that, it just begins with the design, and then you're like, well, if there's a button, what happens when you push the button, And yeah, that's really cool.
The main idea of this segment is that this character, whose their name is Music Button, there's lots of people around that want them to push the button, and the button plays dance music, and everybody dances when this button is pushed. And I can't remember exactly what she said about this button, but it was the basic idea of it was it was kind of like with this short, like people have expectations of what they want from you.
Yeah.
Because each of them has done at least one thing that they are very specifically famous for. Like in her case, it's Steven Universe. And people are going to be expecting that a Rebecca Sugar short is going to be like Steven Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And they explicitly wanted this to not be like anything that they had done before. And this is nothing like Steven Universe.
Yeah. I was surprised to learn. I don't even know that much Steven Universe, but the little bit that I've seen, I was very surprised to see that it was them that did this short.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Steven Universe is sci-fi, but that's basically the only thing really that this has in common. Like in Steven Universe, everything is so much more clean and beautiful in a way. Like I would not describe this short as beautiful at all.
It's it has a grimy look to it with all the ravers and when it begins, they're in that apartment and it looks very dreary and like, you know, kind of depressing.
They end up in a sewer.
Yeah, it's like the grungy 1980s urban vibe, which is very much the opposite of Steven Universe.
Yeah, there was a part in the documentary where they basically said that they didn't know what the other people were going to do, but they wanted to make sure that all of the parts were very unique. And I think it was Rebecca that said that they were pretty sure that neither Penn or Patrick were going to have like a 1980s raver vibe to their short.
And they were
correct.
They were right, yes. Good instinct.
I also love the music seems to be so contagious that, you know, there's that scene with the grandma that, you know.
I love that grandma.
And then the grandma starts to become the instigator. She leads the mob as, you know, for more music. And so.
That was a funny touch.
Oh, yeah. I already love little old ladies who defy the expected norms of little old ladies. So I loved that this one played such a huge role in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if she became sort of feral and evil by the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, she really did.
But no, she was funny though.
But yeah, the short, everybody wants the button to be pressed and they end up running away from this angry mob. They end up in a sewer underground where they meet this cloaked creature that is like an octopus, but it has a red rotary telephone for a head. I loved that they leaned into making bizarre creatures that are like completely different things all mashed up together. Because there's like a part, I think there's a part earlier where this character is wondering if there's anyone else like her. And she sees this man slash creature. It looks like it has a human body wearing a tuxedo, but it has giant robot wheels and its head is a fish wearing a bridal veil. Like I don't know that I would want an entire series based on characters like this, but I love for this short that they just mashed up a bunch of stuff and it just works so well for this.
And it really I think that there's something, I will say this, the second short, this is really when the tone starts to shift and it becomes, you know, it's still very funny, but it also becomes kind of sadder, or like you start to get that existential kind of like depressive attitude from the main character. And that's very cool to see with a character that looks so ridiculous, you know, like I think that that's also a very cool thing that they're working with in this short. Is like, you know, with animation we are used to these like funny weird characters, but you know, it's the idea of like how far can you take it so that it looks less and less like a human, but you still kind of like, you know, treat their emotions and take them seriously, and you know, I really appreciated that too.
Well, then also this was the one that started having a little bit more coherence in the narrative, and it's sort of a lot easier to draw me in. That so this was when I was really started to get pulled into it.
By the end, yes, I was very invested in this character, because like at the beginning of the short, like obviously you're not super invested, because like I didn't really know exactly what was happening, because you start with this one character who was born of a mutated eyeball, and then
Mm-hmm.
that person dies essentially and is reborn as this bird thing. It's like, I don't know what this is, and like, it's, I like watching this, but I'm not invested in this character. But then by the end, when they meet this octopus telephone creature that is talking about like submitting to her destiny and like not looking into too much stuff, and like she's thinking that she's under some kind of spell, I guess, and she wants to be free to be her truest self. She wants to get rid of this button and throws it to this angry mob who are all excited that they now have this button. But then she starts morphing and becoming all these other creatures and says she wishes her time here hadn't been so short, and then explodes. And then another character that I've just started getting invested in is now essentially dead. And
Yeah.
then the button stops working, and then there's a voiceover saying, if everything has a beginning and an end, then this was just the middle. And then we go into the third reality, which this section is Patrick McHale's. He was the showrunner of Over the Garden Wall. And I was not expecting this of Patrick McHale. Not that I would have expected the middle set, like I kind of expected something like the beginning from Pendleton Ward, because he's just is bizarre in a very good way. But like the middle section, not expecting that from Ian Jones Quartey and Rebecca Sugar. But I was truly not expecting this from Patrick McHale, because most of what I know Patrick McHale is from is Over the Garden Wall. And yeah, he helped write Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. So I have a little more beyond Over the Garden Wall from him to go off of. But this is so completely different than Over the Garden Wall, which I appreciate. But I was not expecting the way this started to be Patrick McHale. Like, I like watching this the first time, I didn't know who had done each section. Like, I kind of guessed that the first part was Pendleton Ward, and I kind of guessed that the second part was Ian Jones Quartey, and I didn't know who was going to be where. I did not realize until the end that this third part had been Patrick McHale. It was so completely different than what I had expected from him.
Yeah. Just like you, I only knew him from Over the Garden Wall and Pinocchio mainly. And so it was, there wasn't a lot of expectation, like for me, like in going into what he was going to do. Like, other than it was probably going to be really good because we know he has quality taste. But like, no, but this was surprising. It's the way this act three started. Very out of the norm for what I know him for.
Yeah,
I
because
really loved that section though. I was really that whole section in which the character keeps being killed and revived. I thought that was really well done, and it was a nice bridging from the second to the third. I think,
yes.
I think that was
Yeah.
really good on his part on anticipating how am I going to get into my section, knowing that it's going to be the last one as well, which I'm pretty sure they knew who was going to go first, second,
Yes,
last, right?
yes.
Because the text of each one kind of goes in that direction.
Yes, they decided in advance that with the theme of exquisite quartz, Pendleton Ward was taking the head, Rebecca and Ian were taking the body, and Patrick was getting the legs.
And I love how they incorporate a bunch of different animation styles from a bunch of different filmmakers in the last segment. Then Patrick McHale like let other people do their own thing within his segment.
Yeah, because like it opens with when they played Exquisite Corpse, this pickle creature, whatever, I don't know if it's a pickle, it looks like a pickle to me, was one of the characters from their Exquisite Corpse game. And I'm kind of glad he killed this thing off quickly. Like, because I really like the character that he ended up basing the entire short on, which I don't think was part of the original Exquisite Corpse game. I could be wrong, because I don't think they showed that in the documentary.
Oh, really?
But
That's interesting.
I'm glad that they killed off the pickle creature, because like I like it for this brief window of time, but I don't know that I'd want a whole short based off of this thing.
Patrick McHale said that he was like, because Pendleton Ward and Rebecca Sugar took those first two exquisite corpse characters, he was stuck with this one. So I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted to kill it off so that he could do his own character. Because he said he wasn't like dying to do the pickle creature.
Yeah, because but it also makes sense to kill it off because it helps tie the whole thing together
Oh
because
yeah.
it keeps getting reborn as several different things before landing on Screeno, its final form for the short. And it makes sense to kill off the pickle creature. I like that they gave it at least a few minutes or a couple minutes to be what it is, which is apparently the result of a small child praying for a fairy godmother or whatever.
That part might have been that part with the pickle creature and the parents with the gun, like that part might have been my favorite part because I think because it was funny. I think it was the funniest part.
It was the funniest part. I don't know that it's my favorite part, but in terms of laughs, it is the funniest part. And I
Yeah.
like it for that alone. It
It
was the
was fun.
funniest part.
Yeah, it was the funniest part. I agree. It wasn't my favorite actually, but like it was. I think I laughed the most
Oh
on
yeah, definitely.
that.
Yeah, so this thing is apparently reborn again when this child makes a wish, and then it's killed by the child's parents because the line about "I just need your kid for something" and then the dad shoots it. It's like that is so it's just bizarre and hilarious.
And you can't blame him for
No.
doing it, right?
I mean, if your child was apparently being set upon by a giant 6-foot pickle with m multiple arms and legs,
He said,
what else are you gonna do?
"I need your child for something." Yeah, that's creepy as hell. Yeah, no.
Is. Like, it's funny, but if it was real life, that would be horrifying.
Exactly.
But then she's reborn again in the middle of some kind of a war, and I'm not sure who did each section where they're killed and reborn. And I don't think it was this person, but this section where it's in the middle of a war reminded me of a movie called Bird Boy and the Forgotten Children or something. I did not like that movie, but it was like this really gory animated film. But there's just something about the vibe of that movie that reminded me of this little section in the war.
Yeah, I don't know the filmography of the animators and artists who worked on these like small in-between segments, but like that war segment was done by someone named Nick Diliberto, and he's done films before, but I don't know what he's done. So maybe he could have done something we've seen before, but I'm not sure.
I
The
don't
one
think it was
the
the same director because I looked up the director while they were like listing off different people who had worked on that section, and the director
Yeah.
of Bird Boy is Alberto Vasquez, and I don't think that name was mentioned at all. So,
Okay. Yeah.
but there was just something about the gross visceralness of the war that reminded me of that because the Bird Boy movie was just gross and visceral.
You're right. Similar vibes.
And then, of course, it's a war, so she's killed immediately again,
Right.
and then wakes up in another art style in a bathtub, fully clothed as a little boy with a giant head. And then they try to stand up and they fall over and die again.
Yeah, that was funny too. This whole section is really funny, and obviously in a very dark black comedy kind of way, but they do have a lot of fun with it.
Agreed. And then this is where they wake up in the final body of the short. Now she is a technologically organic hybrid creature named Screeno who has a television for a stomach.
And
And
looks a little bit like Gumby or like a frog, has like a frog
yeah, the
face.
head is indeterminate. I don't know what the head is.
Yeah, I thought it looks kind of like a heart head, but I
Yeah, like if a frog had a heart for a head, maybe. A frog
I
slash heart slash Gumby.
yeah, I could not determine.
But then this is where like the whole thing really starts coming together because she wakes up as this Screeno creature with an anime scientist.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that's really cool too, because I think they're making a real effort to have each section have distinct animation styles.
Yes.
And I guess this is why we're all talking about how this didn't feel like Patrick McHale, or it was so surprising, because it does have like that anime feel to it. But very different in terms of, color palette and style of animation from Over the Garden Wall.
Yeah, 'cause like when I think of Patrick McHale, I think of Over the Garden Wall. Like, even though he had was such a huge part of Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, I don't think of him specifically because that was Guillermo del Toro's movie. He just
And
kind of
even
helped with the script.
totally, and even the Pinocchio movie, it does have a little bit of a Over the Garden Wall feel to it, obviously mixed in with other stuff, but you have that kind of like old-timey aesthetic and kind of handcrafted thing to it. This is very slick, anime, contemporary, modern. So yeah.
Yeah, that's why I did not clock this as Patrick McHale at all until I looked it up, because I was expecting something that looked like Over the Garden Wall. I shouldn't have, but that's what I went in thinking.
But this was the my favorite segment by
Mine too.
far.
Yes. It's the part that felt the most real for a short about a robot television creature learning to accept their life.
Yeah, and I think because we had gone into such weird directions before, the special kind of earned to become very grounded and, in emotions and just two characters going at it with each other in this last section.
The thrust of this section is she doesn't want to keep doing this over and over again, like, because she's aware that she keeps dying. She apparently is retaining the memories of all these past lives in some way. Like, she knows that she has been alive before and will continue. But she sees that this anime scientist, what was his name? Dave? Dan? So, Dan, I think. He's built her with a kill switch for whatever reason. So she wants to flip this switch, die, and hope that that's the end. But he doesn't want to, and they start talking and like start to genuinely become friends, which is so it's so interesting that they were able to do that so quickly. Like, this is not a long special, but I guess it's just Patrick McHale's ability to write dialogue, because you genuinely believe that in these 2 minutes or whatever, that they've become really close and become really good friends. And they get to the point where she still wants to flip the kill switch, but now she's not sure. And she's like having second thoughts. So they go for a walk. It's like it becoming more realistic almost. Like, it is kind of anime inspired, but they're like in New York, walking around the city in the wintertime. And he wants to go and get some nuts, which apparently is a real thing.
Oh yeah, definitely. Nuts for nuts. There's one a couple blocks from my apartment. One of
I
those
was going to
carts.
ask if you knew what this was, because I saw people online saying that this was real.
And they're pretty good. And they smell really good. When you're walking down the street and there's one of those carts, you're like, oh, that's that smell. You want to get some nuts because they have like they're like candied and stuff. They're like sweet nuts, sweet cashews, that kind of thing.
I wonder, it's probably similar to like every Christmas, my cousins and I go to a store called Mall Holes to get. Sarah likes to get a real Christmas tree. She didn't this year because they were, for whatever reason, like twice as much. She couldn't afford it. But right inside the door at this, it's like a giant mall slash garden center. They have it's not a cart, but it's like a little building where they roast nuts. And I wonder if it's a similar thing, because it's like candied cashews and pecans and
Oh,
everything.
I bet it's the same thing. Yeah, that sounds about right.
They're really good. We only got them once, but every time we go in there, the smell is just so good. Anyways, he goes off to get some nuts, and she's contemplating flipping the kill switch, and then there's a crash sound, and he's been hit by a car. So he's rushed to the hospital, and the doctor, there's kind of like a fake out that you think that he's died, but the doctor just says he may never walk again. And she's like genuinely concerned and upset, and has given up on the idea of hitting the kill switch. And he wakes up, and she tells him that all she's been trying to do is accept death, but maybe now she needs to accept life. And then she reaches to get him a glass of water and accidentally hits the kill switch. And that was like one of the most genuinely shocking things I've seen in a long time.
I was, yeah, I that was so, I was like, oh no, you can't end like that. Like,
Yes, I was
I was
like,
really.
I thought that was the end. I was like, I hate this now. Thankfully, it
Yeah,
was not.
yeah.
But there's, it goes black. The screen goes black. You just assume that she's dead again. And then I do not understand this next section. We're in like a black void, and there's these cloaked figures who seem to be made of like stop motion collage. I really like the aesthetic of this. I don't know what the meaning of it
Yeah,
is. They're like
very
waving their hands
haunting.
over something, and it
I
we pull
think that's
back to reveal
supposed
a
to
giant
be,
elephant.
yeah, that's right, the elephant, which is the name of the special. And I was wondering, why is it
I
called
don't know
that? I
why I
have a
don't
theory.
understand
I have a
it.
theory, and I'm not sure if it's an elephant in this story, but I've heard once this story about, there's this idea that, if you blindfold someone, I think maybe a philosophical thing, I can't remember, but I've
Oh,
heard
Plato's
something.
Cave? Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's not quite Plato's cave. It's something, but it's if you blindfold someone and you make them touch a part of an elephant, like the tusk or the tail or something, based on what they're touching, they're gonna think that they're holding a different animal. That you wouldn't say elephant. It's just like each part feels so different from the others. Like the trunk is so long that you said maybe this is like a giraffe's neck or something, or like or a like a snake. And then if you touch the tail, you'd be like, oh, this is a horse. And if you
This sounds
touch the
vaguely
tusk, you'll be
familiar.
the, you know, this
I've
is the
probably heard
horn of a
this before. This
bull.
sounds familiar.
And then you wouldn't guess that it's an elephant altogether. And see, I think the idea of the exquisite corpse maybe has, they maybe were thinking of that story in that context of like each single part, it feels so different, but together they make up an elephant, that you weren't expecting.
That's a good
Yeah.
theory.
That is the most, that makes more sense than anything I could have thought up of. I think we'll go with that because we don't have another explanation.
Yeah,
I
it took me
don't
a
remember
while
them
to.
addressing that in this in the behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's the only thing that came to mind in terms of like what it could, why they would have named it that. But I've been, I guess there is that elephant in that brief moment, which is very haunting and very memorable,
Yeah. I don't understand it, but I kind of love the section, even though I don't know why it was there or what purpose it serves the story. I just kind of love it, especially because it's not the end. Because like if it had ended that way, I would have been like, well, that's cool, but she's dead and I hate this. But then she's not dead. We go back to the hospital and the scientist and Screeno are looking horrified at the kill switch, and he realizes that it didn't even work because he's terrible at robotics. And
which
then
is
that's
also
the end. And I was like, okay, I can now love this again.
funny. They saved it, and that was
Yes.
great. And yeah, they saved, and it was great because, and that was a great ending too, because they set up that he was a bad scientist.
Yeah.
So the setup was there, and so it wasn't like it just the kill switch didn't work for no reason.
No, I'm glad it ended where it did. Like that's the perfect ending for this bizarre short, and it is part of the reason why I love this. Like I would have liked it as a one-time experience, regardless. Even if it had had a bad ending, I would have been like, I hated the end, but I'm glad I watched this because I've had that before. Well, with the Snow White that you and I talked about, Conrado, I hated the
That's
ending of that
right.
movie, but
Yeah,
I
that's
loved the
a.
experience of the movie itself. And this could have been that again, but they saved it. They couldn't have saved it for that Snow White version, but they saved it for this one.
I have a similar reaction to you. It's like I felt the same way. It like if they had ended it with the elephants, and like I would have hated that. It would have been, I would have loved it because of like the whole thing, but like the ending is so much better when when you think she's going to die, but she doesn't, because like they don't do a whole lot of explaining about what exactly is going on, how all this works. All you know is that when she dies, she gets resurrected into another body, and they did a really good job like setting up the kill switch as like, yes, if she pulls that switch, she's going to die. And so if you so they did a good job with the fake out expectation for like to up the drama, but yeah, but there's an ending. It's like she accepted the fact that she doesn't want to die and that she wants to have a life because she found this anime scientist guy that she really loves, and she wants to spend time with him, and that's a nice ending. And it was
Yes.
like, and they didn't have to do a nice ending. This could have been, this is a one shot. It was experimental. They could have done something dark, but like, I like how they chose to end it like that because that made it definitely made the whole thing better.
Yes.
And I think there is something really, sweet and thoughtful about where the story ends up going in terms of it kind of like becomes to me really a story about sort of like, I guess kind of like depression and self-acceptance in some ways of this character that keeps having to live through life in these bizarre bodies that they, feel uncomfortable with. Like in the last section, Screeno even, I think, verbalized at certain points that she doesn't like her body, that she's like, I'm just like this weird creature. Why would you design me this way? Like, what's the whole point of this? Like, and then to like really be able to get a little bit out of herself and connect with someone else is the thing that, brings her to embrace her existence and life. That seems pretty truthful to me. So I really appreciated where the story went.
Yeah, and that makes sense because like every moment up till the ending of this special when she wasn't feeling connected with anyone and like she felt like out of place, and once she actually did connect with someone, that was when she felt content and satisfied. So that makes total sense.
Yeah, they did such a good job with this. Like I said, I was not expecting to actually love this. It's, I went in expecting an interesting experience. I did not expect to like it so much that I felt like this needed to be a podcast where I talk about it with somebody.
It was like so surprisingly well made. Like it was, and when you think about how no the directors were working with each other, it was sort of accidentally well made in a way, and which might be why it was so good. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, there was a thing also in the behind the scenes where I think it was Pendleton talking about how like they were unsure, obviously, whether this was even going to work. But then towards the end, I think in the Screeno section, there was a line about talking about her being reborn for someone who needs them. And like, I think in the context of that, I think she was talking about Dan, the scientist. But then Pendleton is reflecting on that, and he's like, that helped with the other sections because it made things make sense that they weren't even intending to. Because like in his section, his character saves the arm frog, which is a bizarre sentence. But like in that life, her purpose was to save the life of the frog creature. Like you don't know what eventually happens to this frog creature, but you can just imagine that this frog creature goes on to have an important life in some way, but it wouldn't have if the assassin had killed the frog. So she sacrificed her life to save the frog.
And and you'd get a little bit of that too in the kind of like revival montage with the kid that wishes her into existence and things like that,
No, it all worked so well, so much better than I would have expected.
Yeah, I have a blog where I like highlight all of my favorite whatever of the year movies, video games, TV shows, what's anything. My and like I had it was called like Best Entertainment of the Year, and I did Best Entertainment of 2025, and I put this here, and I'm very strict about what I add to that list because like because it's a bunch of different mediums, like I always it just the space is limited for how many things I can really put on that list that doesn't make it seem like too long. Like I'm just everything I loved is just on the list. And I included this. And I really wasn't expecting to. It was like it came this if you yeah, this came out in December. It was like very close to the end of the year. And so I was like, what are the chances that this like random experimental one shot on Adult Swim was going to like that came out the end of the year was going to be added to the list. And it was like I was like and I was already in the process of making the list, but as soon as I saw this, I was like, I have to add this. I can't not include this. This is too good.
Yeah, definitely. Now that you mention that, I think I need to add it to my list. Like my, because I always do an animation ranking. I think I need to add this to that list. And I think I needed, I haven't recorded my section of my 2025 favorites yet. So I need to add this to that so I can mention it there too. I won't
Oh
talk
yeah.
about it too much because I'm gonna have this will come out after that. But it needs to be mentioned as something like, if you're an animation fan, you need to watch this.
See now you normally are just doing feature length animated movies, but like this is so good. You have to include it. That's how good this is.
Yeah, definitely.
I will definitely agree with all of that. I think this is really, really cool. Really, and like I was saying, it really made me excited about animation, in a way that I hadn't been in a while. So it's cool to see that there's, weird experimental, adventurous things that are still happening out there.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm so glad that they greenlit this because this seems like something that would not get made by anyone. Like,
If someone pitched this to me, I would be like, yeah, that's a cool idea and all, but that isn't gonna work. And we can't spend however much money you want to spend making this come into existence because that's not gonna work. And I would have had to eat my words because this worked. Like, I'm sure it
yeah.
had a lot to do with who was making it because I don't think this would work with just anybody. But because they got four really good writers and animators on this thing, somehow it just worked so much better than you would have ever expected.
Yeah. And like, and I think, I know, in a way, Adult Swim was the best chance of something like this happening because even if you look at the stuff they normally make, like the TV shows, their stuff is the kind of thing that like no other network would greenlit this stuff. That's the kind of stuff that they make. And it's like they are like I feel like they're kind of underrated for their creativity because like if you compare their shows to like the shows of every other network, they make a lot of unique things. So I think it's not surprising in a way that they would make something like this.
That is true, and I don't always appreciate their stuff, maybe as much as I should, but so a lot of the stuff they make just isn't for me. But I have to give them credit for believing in creators and letting them do what they want to do. 'Cause like even if it's something that to me doesn't work, like when was it? It was probably a decade ago now. They had that Too Many Cooks thing.
Yeah, I remember
That was
that.
bizarre, and I didn't really like it, but it became such a meme. So many people loved that thing for whatever reason. But that would not have been made by anybody.
Yeah,
And like,
that's
even if I
true.
don't like something, somebody likes it. And Adult Swim has to be thanked for letting people do what they want to do.
And you gotta take those swings and go into those weird directions to get something, that is really original and cool, and that, even if then you're not gonna hit a home run every time, but the experimentation and the willingness is really appreciated.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because I don't like everything Adult Swim makes either. Like they have some misses, but they also have really good hits when they do hit.
And that really is, for myself, that is really the thing that I'm missing in especially in American animation recently, and in big screen and animated movies. I feel like everyone has kind of like really locked down into a few different types of movies, a few different genres, and the few types of stories. I don't know, even 5, 10 years ago, like when the Spider-Verse movie first came out, it felt like, oh, it's going to do something different. And now what we've had is a lot of movies that have that style, but they're just kind of repeating the same thing instead of like pushing into new directions, which is what I was hoping more of that would happen. I don't know, maybe was still there's still time, there can be cool stuff going on in the future. So I hope there is.
I've had I've had similarly cynical feelings about like the American animation industry, so I kind of get what you're talking about. Like when you watch the feature films that get made, a lot of studios are very reluctant to like experiment or try new things, and that can be for someone who loves like animation and the potential of that medium as much as I do, that can be kind of depressing to watch. But there are things like the elephants, for example, but but not just the elephant there. Every once in a while, you get a glimpse of creativity out there, and I'm always on the lookout for stuff like that. So,
Yeah.
like,
And I am sure that all the directors, writers, the animators, I'm sure they want to do this weird, crazy stuff. You know, they're probably like dying to do it. And it's just that, you know, the studios and the people in charge and obviously the accountants and probably all saying like, no, we have to be very safe because we got to make the money back. It's expensive,
They're
whatever.
being creatively restrained. Yes, they are. When you hear animators like talking about stuff like that, whenever they're able to be free to talk about stuff like that, you can always tell they're creative. A lot of animators and artists are not living up to their potential because of creative restraints. So,
I wish that they would restrain the budgets instead of the creatives, because I would much rather have a movie with a really small budget where the animators are just given free rein to tell the story they want to tell, regardless of what happens. Because, like, that's why their people are so afraid to let the animators be creative, is because they have like a $500 million budget and they want to make their money back. Just give them a $15 million budget and tell them to go wild. And like, even if it fails, they'll probably make the budget back.
Case in point, the elephant in Adult Swim, right? It's just a special, it's just 20 minutes. You can do something crazy and go for it. And you know, you don't have to worry too much about making money back. So yeah, these are really the places where you can go into those directions. So I'm glad that they're doing it.
It probably wouldn't have gotten made if it was like a feature length like film or
No.
something.
Yeah,
I
no.
doubt it. But you're absolutely right about the budget thing, because like the higher the budget is, the more formulaic and like safe movies are. I've noticed that. I've noticed that. But like but the you and what you say about lowering the budget so that there's less risk is something that people have argued about before, but like a lot of film studios will dismiss that because they're so greedy. They want to make sure that they want high budgets and high profits, and that's all they care about. They don't need like low budgets and like hopefully high profits. It's like too small a target for them, so they like it's very hard to like convince studios to like do low budget things.
Well, hopefully, if more stuff like this gets made on a lower budget in a shorter time span, because I think this only took like 6 months to do. From the thing in the documentary, it said something like 6 months prior, and they were like meeting about what they were going to do. So I'm pretty sure this was a pretty short turnaround. I hope that companies could use this, not like don't do this again, like do something else, but just give the creators the license to do what they want and use this as proof that it can be done. Like, it doesn't need a big budget, it doesn't even need a ton of time, but if you let the animators do what they do, let the writers write what they want, you can get something really memorable.
That's I hope so too. I want more creativity in the animation industry.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that is probably all we have to say about the elephant. We've probably talked about it for 2 to 3 times as long as the
That's true.
runtime of the actual short was. But thanks for joining me for this. I was not planning on doing a podcast on this, but as soon as I saw it, I was like, I have to talk about this with somebody. So I'm glad you guys were available and liked it as much as I did.
Yeah, thank you for having us. I think this came out really well and really coherent, given the fact that you decided to copy the special and had all of us record individually, and you just like put our conversations together to see if they made any sense. So I think we did really well.
I'll just leave that in and confuse anyone who gets to the end.
As soon as you like asked me if I wanted to talk about this, I immediately said yes, because it was like I absolutely, like, I was still on the high of watching this when you approached me about a podcast. So I was like, I have things to say. I definitely want to discuss this.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining me. I'm sure we'll be back with something else in the future. But until then, do you guys want to let people know where they can find you on the internet if they'd like more from you, Conrado?
Yeah, sure. I'll go first because it'll be quick. If you want to find me, you probably have to go on Letterboxd. That's really the only social media that I'm using right now, which is, for movies and stuff. And you can find me if you search my name, Conrado. My username is technically Conrado III. So if you search for that, you'll find me as well. I'm the guy with the little Gomez Adams emoji avatar. So that's how you can find me, and then you can see what I'm, watching. And I do tend to write short reviews there as well. I try to keep up with that. So yeah, that's where you can find my thoughts and whatnot.
Okay, and Eli?
Yeah, I'm mostly on Twitter and Blue Sky at eJunkie2014, but I also have a blog where I write longer posts about the entertainment industry, and that blog is called the Entertainment Junkie Blog, and my website is eJunkieBlog.com.
Okay, well, thanks for joining me, and we'll see you again soon for something else.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me. It's always a good
Thank you.
time.
Thanks for listening to iHeart Animation. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and follow my co-hosts as well. My link tree and all of our links will be in the description below. If you want more of my content, all my podcasts are available on YouTube as well as most podcast platforms. If you enjoyed this show, check out one of the other podcasts or check out my Patreon for bonus and extended episodes you won't find anywhere else. We'll be back soon with another brand new episode, so thanks for listening and we'll see you next time. Thank you.